Hey everyone, what's going on? Glad you could tune in to Dose of the Dead podcast, and welcome to episode 23. This episode is a groundbreaking episode, if you would call it. We have our first interview on the episode, so it's not just going to be me talking the whole time. We're actually going to get some insight from other people, and hopefully we can get more of these as we get going. But, yeah, so like I said, this episode is going to be, I'm going to read some news of upcoming releases for the Dead, and then we're going to get into some Seattle, a new segment from 94 in Seattle with the Dead. I think it's kind of funny how the newscasters portray, quote-unquote, psychedelic deadheads, and how it's just totally I don't know, you'll have to listen to it. There's a video on YouTube if you want to see the full video, but I think listening to it will be enough to just, you get a kick out of it. And it's from, like I said, in, I think 94. Then also I'm going to play Terrapin Station from July 1st, 79 in Seattle. This is the last Terrapin with Jerry playing the wolf before he switched to the tiger. And the reason I am playing these things from Seattle is because my interviewee is my very close and good friend, John Valencia, who lives just outside of Seattle. He lives in somewhere in Washington. I'm not totally sure. But I grew up with him in New Jersey, here in Brick, New Jersey. And then he joined the military and was stationed out there. He just ended his stint with the military in October or November, I think. And he came home for a little bit after that. But he's actually out there living in Washington State for good now. So that is why I am picking those Seattle picks. And then we'll also be discussing, as I shared in my Instagram post earlier in the week, the Phil and Friend show that we went to when he came home on October 26th from Convention Hall in Asbury Park, New Jersey. We'll be going over some Gorge experiences and upcoming Dead and Company summer tour date out there. And then also just his story of the getting into the Dead. He's fairly new, a newcomer to the Grateful Dead. So I just want to, for those people who are kind of in the same boat, what I just want to get what songs, what mindsets you had before, and then after listening to them for a while, what, you know, did your opinions change, or, you know, stuff like that. So that's coming up later in the episode. Like I said, I'm going to talk about some upcoming releases in the next couple months. So Garcia Live Volume 10 from May 20th, 1990 is coming out for release on February 23rd of this year. Here's a little briefing of it. Garcia Live Volume 10 documents the Jerry Garcia Band's May 20th, 1990 performance at the Hilo Civic Auditorium in Hawaii. In this relaxing setting, complete with lays on stage, it's no wonder that the music from the show shines so brightly. Both in Garcia's strong vocals and guitar playing, but also the Joe DeVere set list spanning from Jerry's favorite corners of popular music, Dylan, Motown, reggae, and rock and roll, spurred by an ever-steady rhythm section of Dave Kemper and John Kahn, the Garcia Band this night seems to pull out all the stops and complete the celestial sounds of Melvin Seals' organ and the background vocals of Gloria Jones and Jacqueline LaBranch. The sum of these parts that define the 1990s Garcia Band sound would make for a magical Sunday night that first kicked off with the Holland favorite "How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You," followed by an "They Love Each Other." Sprinkled in throughout the night are five Dylan covers, including powerfully delivered vocals on "Knocking on Heaven's Door," "Forever Forever Young, and A Positively Soaring Tangled Up in Blue as an encore. All Along the Way covers like Stop That Train, Waiting for a Miracle, and Everlange, adaptly except originals like Deal and Run for the Roses. So disc one is How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You, They Love Each Other, Tough Mama, Like a Road Leading Home, Run for the Roses, the way You Do the Things You Do, one of my favorites, My Sisters and Brothers, Knocking on Heaven's Door, Deal is disc two, The Harder They Come, Forever Young, Stop the Train, Tore Up Over You, Tears of Range, Everline, That Lucky Old Son, Waiting on a Miracle, and Tangled Up in Blue. So I'm really excited about that release. I'm hoping to do a show centered around that release. Not just this disc, but everything. I don't want to say too much, but hoping that we can get that in the works. Also, the Best of the Grateful Dead live. So as most of you know, in 2015 they came out Best of the Grateful Dead, and that was a studio album. It was two disc greatest hits track. I got it. I wasn't too fond of it. I don't know, the sound, it just sounded like it was just too, I don't know, it sounded like it was digitalized, like a MP3. I couldn't really get that much out of it. Like, their other releases sounded a lot better than this, so I wasn't that good of that much of a fan of it, and I thought they were missing I know everyone's, there's like 30 songs, how are they gonna miss out a song? But I feel like they did. So that's just my opinion. I'm sure some people were totally fine with it, but this is sort of a follow-up to that disc, and it's the Best of the Grateful Dead live. It's quoted as being, it's like the Grateful Dead for beginners. The Best of the Grateful Dead Live is a career-spanning two-disc collection of the cherry-picked from the band's live albums on Warner Brothers, Arista, and plus a few tracks from many of their archival live releases. Ideal for listeners that are just discovering the band, it is a well-curated section of tracks that are so fresh, that are also a fresh look at old favorites of Die Hard Deadheads. Among the album's recordings is the version of So Many Roads captured at the Grateful Dead's legendary final concert ever at Chicago Soldier Field in 1995. Quote, we want to follow up the 2015 Best of the Grateful Dead studio set with a live counterpart and have focuses on the efforts of the primary band's live albums as well as some key tracks from our archival concert releases, said the band's archivist and producer David Lemieux in a press conference. Just as there was nothing like a Grateful Dead concert, there is also nothing like a live Grateful Dead recording. It's no secret that as good as the Dead studio recordings were, they were excellent in front of an audience, and this set provides an overview of just how great the Dead were live in concert. This 2-CD version of the Best Grateful Dead Live is set for release on March 23rd, 2018. Volume 1 of the collection will be available on 180-gram vinyl as a 2-LP set covering the first half of the volume. Volume 2 will be released at a later date. So this is the set list or track listing for this disc. Disc 1, St. Stephen from Fillmore West, in 227-69, Bertha, Fillmore East, 427-71, Wharf Rat, Fillmore East, 426-71, Sugar Magnolia, Olympia Theater, 5-4-72, Jack Straw, Olympia Theater, 5-3-72, Truckin, Lensium Theater, 526-72, Morning Dew, same theater, same date, Brown Eyed Woman, Trivoli Concert Hall, 4-14-72, The Music Never Stopped, Great American Music Hall, 8-13-75, Estimated Profit, Barton Hall, 8-58-77, the infamous Cornell Show. Disc 2, Friend of the Devil, Radio City Music Hall, 10-27-80, Feel Like a Stranger, Warfield Theater, 10-4-80, Fire on the Mountain, Radio City Music Hall, 10-31-80, there's a Halloween show for you, Birdsong, Warfield Theater, 10-14-80, wow, looks like they're just sticking with a couple years on the second disc, Ripple, Warfield Theater, 10-4-80, Eyes of the World, Nassau Coliseum, 3-29-90, Touch of Grey, Rich Stadium, 4-7-89, Blow Away, JFK Stadium 7789, and Somany Road, Soldier Field 7995. So, looking at it just from afar, it looks like it's really 69 to 72. And then you got a 75 and a 77 thrown in there. Then disc two, you got 5 shows just from all of October of 1980. And which obviously those are great years, but you would think they would have it in chronological order and also spread it out a little more. But I don't know. Then because you got Eyes of the World from 90. And then you go Touch of Grey and Blow Away from July of 89. And then you finish up with Somany Road in 95. So, I don't know. I probably won't be buying that, mostly because I have... I don't know. I say that now and I don't need it. And I have most of those tracks. But then it comes out and I see it at like Target or Best Buy. And I just wind up buying it. So, we'll see what happens. As of now, I'm saying I'm not going to buy it. Doesn't mean I'm not going to own it. Probably the day it comes out or the weeks after. So, let's get into the episode. Right now, like I said, I'm going to run the news segment from 1994 on a Seattle local news station. And then after that, I'll be playing Terrapin Station from 7179 in Seattle. And also, like I said, that is the last Terrapin play with Jerry playing on the Wolf before switching to the Tiger. Then after that, we'll get into the interviews. So enjoy.
You're watching KSTW TV 11. Now with the first news for Western Washington. This is the 10 o'clock news with Don Porter and Inga Hammond.
Groups come and groups go, but the Grateful Dead just keeps on trucking. Well, don't adjust your set. This is not a flashback from the 60s.
It's psychedelic. The Grateful Dead is in Seattle, and wherever the Dead go to play, of course, the Deadheads are right there to groove along with them. Molly Mecca is live in Seattle with the latest on the Dead's Seattle trip tonight. Molly?
Don, the concert is just getting out right now, and 22,000 Deadheads are leaving Memorial Coliseum. But tomorrow night, they will be back, because that's what makes Deadheads unique, is they just travel from show to show to show.
Hey, it's cheap for Texas. Yes, and it's cheap for Timbuktu.
If you think this is just another concert, think again. This is a rock and roll experience unlike any other. But first things first, on stage tonight, the Grateful Dead. In the audience are the Deadheads.
I've been to about 80 shows or so.
Joe drives to the shows in his painted bus. Like hundreds of others in the crowd, he follows the band from city to city.
I see friends from all over the country here. It's a good fun thing.
They call themselves Deadheads, and they support their habit any way they can.
Giant vegetarian egg roll.
Egg rolls are a means to an end for this Deadhead.
We sell some egg rolls and get enough to kind of finance our way and stuff.
Tuna burrito?
Yeah.
Sure, we can do that.
Tom is originally from Maine, but he spent the last 2 years living in his truck. Just so, you got it, he can follow the Dead.
I guess I see it as just, you know, a family event, you know, a bunch of folks that you know and you travel with and kind of help each other out.
And with that, Tom trades an egg roll for a burrito. After all, Deadheads have to stick together. Because in the end, they all want the same thing. To be here in the presence of the band and their fellow Deadheads. It was some show tonight. The band was on stage for just about 4 hours. Now, the Grateful Dead will play here again tomorrow night. And then this caravan of people heads to Eugene, Oregon for 3 more sold-out shows. In Seattle, I'm Molly Mack reporting live.
Holly, real quickly, you said the show just got out. Are they anticipating traffic problems around there tonight?
You can expect some traffic problems. You can expect a lot of people problems, as there are literally thousands of people down here near the Seattle Center tonight. In fact, there's a parking lot right over here that they want to have cleared by 11 o'clock tonight. And that seems to be going to pose some sort of problems for all of the security teams that have shown up.
Okay, thanks very much, Molly Mack.
Disaster. How it stands today, you decide he was wise. Still, makes no choice. Soon you will not hear his voice. His job is to shed light, not to master.
tone. We pay the tone. Off in golden horse he will come back, but he cannot be bought or sold.
So that was Terrapin Station from 7179. Now I'm going to get right into the interview with my first interviewee, John Valencia. John, what's up? How's it going?
What's going on, gentle listeners? I'm happy to be here.
So before we get into anything too serious, Us being huge Eagles fans, I was wondering, with 3 days away, what's your prediction for the Super Bowl?
Oh man, I don't want to jinx anything, but I can't pick against my squad. I think regardless of who wins, it's going to be a close game. I think we'll see probably a tie game going into halftime, and I think the halftime adjustment is what's going to be the difference. I think if Nick Foles turns the ball over even once, I think that kind of puts it in the Patriots' favor. So I think Nick Foles and the offense, they just have to play a clean game. It can't be like Atlanta where they came out and turned it over like three times in the first half. It has to be a clean game. But I think Doug Peterson, you know, he's done a tremendous job. He's great at those halftime adjustments, as I just mentioned. So I'm going to pick Eagles 24-20 in this one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I feel like it has to be like an equal medium of the Atlanta game and the Minnesota game. Obviously, it's not going to be that, but I was thinking 27-20 Eagles. I just didn't want to. What was the last Super Bowl in 04? 24-21, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not positive, but that sounds about right. You know, all these Patriots Super Bowls, they're always one possession games, it seems like. So it's going to be stressful. It's going to be a bumpy ride, but I think in the end we'll pull it out.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, we can slide down those Crisco's poles and on down Broad Street.
Yeah. Actually using gear oil. Some of the gear oil, I think it's called. They're not using Crisco anymore. They found an alternative.
So probably a cheaper solution.
Yeah, right.
Typical Philly. Also, if anyone is interested in anything about the draft, fantasy football, when the season comes of, or any other football questions, you could hit him up at what's your Twitter?
At John Valencia, JONVALENCIA _WIB on Twitter.
So you could answer, he'll answer your questions there if you have any questions, or you could also tune into his podcast. It's called Breaking the Draft, right?
Yes, sir. That's on iTunes, SoundCloud.
All right. So let's get right into the Phil Lesh and Friends show from October 26th, 2018, Convention Hall, Asbury Park. So this was your first Dead based show you went to, like, live, right?
Yes, it was. The only one I've been to so far.
So this was kind of like a last minute thing. I was looking at tickets for a couple months, and they were all around like $100 range, since this venue is such like a more intimate venue. It's not a, you know, like a Madison Square Garden or anything. So I didn't plan on going until I looked at StubHub 2 days before, and I saw tickets were $11. So I figured I couldn't miss out on this. So John was home from the Army, so I actually texted him and asked him if he wanted to go. He was down. So I mean, $10 to go see a show. It's not like 1970 anymore. You don't really come past those opportunities, so he couldn't pass it up. So he got out of work and hopped on the train, head over to Asbury, and got lost at a few bars before. And then I think we got in way too early, which our seats were right before general admission, the last row of seats, and then the first set began. So what was your I'll read off the first set real quick. It was Big River, Ruben and Cherise, Friend of the Devil, To Rise You Fall, Ramble on Rose, Girl from North Country, West LA Fadeaway, and Scarlet Begonias. So what was your takeaway from like that first set list of your first show?
First, I just want to say, I'm probably going to butcher some of these songs. I'm not really familiar with all of these songs yet. You Grateful Dead fans, I mean, I'm a Grateful Dead fan as well, but y'all are crazy. There's so many songs that I have to still learn and kind of keep track of. But
defense, a lot of the set list, I would say like three or four of them are covers. Like, you got a Johnny Cash in there, you got a Jerry Garcia Band, you got Bob Dylan. So it's not all just Grateful Dead, but good.
Yeah, like they came out pretty nice. I love the tempo, you know, kind of got us out of our seats, swaying a little bit. There were a few slow songs in there, which kind of threw me off, but it was all right. I love how they ended with Scarlet Begonias, because actually on the way to the show, that's the song that I was just singing out loud. That's really the only Dead song that I actually really could really recite word for word, just because Sublime covers it, and as Angelo knows, Sublime's my favorite band. and we've listened to them for a good amount of time now. But yeah, I love the tempo. Definitely was a good first impression. Sitting there for 2 hours before time wasn't the best, but we definitely got bang for our buck, and yeah, I loved it. Definitely set the mood for the second set.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the first set was good, but like what was in store for the second set was like totally different, and that like really pushed it over the edge. So like you were saying, Scarlet Begonias, what album is that on? Everything from the Sun. What Sublime album is that from?
I want to say it's from their self.
Oh, self title.
I think so. I'm not 100% positive. You know, obviously Sublime. That's my go-to. But it's been a while. You know, the Dead is just taking over for me lately. That's all I listen to nowadays.
Yeah, and I remember you, like, when we first, well, not when we first, but, like, well, that's kind of how we became friends, is just listening to Sublime, like, all the time,
yeah.
And they're like, oh, you listen to Sublime,
right.
Too? And then that was, like, the take off of our friendship. But I remember you saying your dad was actually a Deadhead, right?
Yeah, my dad, he used to follow them around a little bit. That's before he went more religious on me. Well, not on me, but he kind of took that religious route. My stepdad as well, I don't know if he was as active, you know, following them around and everything, but he's a huge Grateful Dead fan as well. And whenever I go in his truck or whatever, he'll drive me to the airport, and that's all that's playing the entire time. I love it.
Yeah, so, and you were saying, I remember when you, like, were showing your dad the Scarlet Begonias song or whatever, he's like, oh, this is a Grateful Dead song, and then we listen to it, and it's, like, totally different tempo, where, like, the Grateful Dead's, like, just like a regular song, and more Sublime's more like a rap version. I think there's a few extra verses in the Sublime one that's not featured.
Definitely way more fast-paced
yeah.
in the Sublime version as well.
So then, after the first set, you had the nice 45 minutes to do nothing and hang out for 45 minutes. So the cool part about that was all the security left for some reason. I don't know why anyone think that would be a good idea, but for our benefit, we got to walk right down to straight to the pit. So this whole second set, we were in general admission, and I feel like the vibe down there was a lot more friendlier and not uptight as, like, the people we were sitting around the first set, especially with that lady, like, screaming for, like, four songs straight. I don't know if you remember that, just on top of her lungs.
I do.
But so the set for the second set, I mean, the set list for the second set was Jack Straw, Dear Mr. Fantasy, St. Stephen, The Eleven, St. Stephen, Dark Star, guests appearance from the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. So that was, like, basically the drums and bass for this show. And then they went back out into Dark Star, Help on the Way, Slipknot, Franklin's Tower. And then the encore was Not Fade Away. So what would you take away from the second set?
Second set was unbelievable atmosphere. I really wish we were down there for the first set, but I think that we benefited going down there for the second set, though, because I think the mood and the vibes down there for that second set were just a lot better. Just that other band as well that came out, you mentioned them. I'm not going to even try to say their name because you stumbled on it a little bit.
Yeah, but, I think the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. But
Hall Jazz Band, right. we got it. But, yeah, it was phenomenal. Phil Lesh and his group, they really blended well with the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. I'll just go ahead and say it again. And the vibes were phenomenal. The encore was gracious. I on our way out, there was a little walk to the train station, and I was just singing Not Fade Away the entire time. Really, I didn't even know the words too well. I had to ask Angelo to clarify a little bit. And I got my dog here chewing on a chew toy. But yeah, it was phenomenal. I mean, that had me wanting to go back right away. Like, I haven't been to another show since then, but I have the itch is there for sure, and that really set the mood and kind of helped me just get onto this path of just listening to the Dead all the time.
Yeah, I was gonna say, definitely Not Fade Away is the top one of the top songs, especially with everyone clapping and chanting at the end. And and then on our way to the train, we ran into those couple of people who just apparently didn't decide to get a ride home. So they took the train home and then asked us for a ride. And we both kind of looked at each other like, should we? And then I was like, yeah, if it was any other concert, no. But
right, exactly,
it's, like,
yep.
It's, you know, it's these people aren't going to fuck you over. And if you do, then, I don't know, it's just going to be bad karma for them. So, like I said, it was just an awesome show. I have a review on, archive.org that, someone left of this show. The audio recording was good and the show was solid, but it's one of those instances where, you just had to be there to appreciate the full impact. The show surprised me. 22 years since Jerry passed on, and you start to wonder if you'll see anything of that magic again. The venue, Convention Hall in Asbury Park, is older and kind of funky, mostly like a high school gym, except it's right on the ocean. And so many great musicians have played there over the years. Again, this is a plus. It's a smaller venue, not seeing like a stadium show. My friend brought me a ticket for the show, and I went without expectations. I had no idea who Nikki Bloom was, also she was awesome. I knew about Robert Randolph, and I have seen the Preservation Hall Jazz Band and their traditional New Orleans Dixieland jazz lineup, but I've never seen Phil's solo lineups. That was also my first Phil show. I never saw him either. The show started off well, playing solid, but you know, knew something special when special was in the air when the audience started singing Ramble on Rose on top of their voices. That moment gave me the chills. From there, we just kept gaining energy and momentum, especially when the jazz band walked out in the middle of Dark Star and played their own mini set, and then segued back into Dark Star with the rest of the band. Okay, this is really good, I thought. The climax, though, was Franklin's Tower for sure. Everyone was on stage playing their hearts out, and for those of us in the crowd, it felt like the roof was going to be torn off the place while we blasted into orbit. An echo across the time of the magic of the Grateful Dead at their best. People left the show stunned, and I still run into heads asking me if I was there. What a show. So that pretty much just says everything what I thought of the show. I'm pretty sure same with you, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right, so now we're going to play two songs from the show picked by John, and they are the set one closer, Scarlet Begonias, and then the set two closer before the encore, Franklin's Tower. So enjoy. Thank you. All right, so that was Scarlet Begonias and Franklin's Tower from 10/26/17. It's not 18. In Asbury Park, New Jersey, Phil Lesh and friends. So now we're going to go on to a different topic. I'm just going to talk about, well, ask John about living in Washington, because he's grown up with me here in Brick, New Jersey, which is probably top five, one of the most boring towns in America. But
you appreciate it more once you get away from it, I'll say that.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But he lives out in Washington State now. I'm not sure. It's right near Seattle, a couple little while from Seattle, but around that area, right?
Yeah, I'm an hour south of Seattle, more so the Olympia area.
All right, so that's why I picked the show from Seattle that I played before he came on, along with that interview from 94 with that local Seattle news station about the Dead. But I just wanted to ask, what are the comparisons you really think of, like, living in Washington compared to New Jersey? Not so much Brick itself, but just New Jersey.
Right. To start, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there will appreciate this, but marijuana, it's legal in Washington, so that in itself is enough reason to live here. But now New Jersey, you know, you got the beach. It gets hot as hell in the summer. It gets cold as hell in the winter. But Washington, the wintertime is not too bad. It's just, it's always rainy. It rains literally every day, whether it's just drizzle or whether it's a downpour. It's going to be raining. But the springtime, it's beautiful in the spring. The summertime, it's nice. It doesn't get too hot, but, you know, it gets a little humid. Other than that, the people, though, the people in Washington, they kind of fit that hipster bill, I guess I'll call it, as you would expect. You know, they
kind of like
that,
Portland, that Portland area people, or?
Exactly. Right, yeah. Portland and Seattle, Washington State, they're kind of, each its own. They're kind of the same thing a little bit. I've only visited Portland once, so I can't really talk too accurately on that. But, it's just such a different style of people, for sure. I don't want to say that people here are more friendly, but they're definitely more down to earth. You know, they're just down to experiment, I guess is a word I'll use. But New Jersey, I love New Jersey. I want to live there again someday, hopefully soon. But Washington, I'm definitely enjoying it out here, and I'll enjoy it until I move somewhere else.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was just watching something with like Jerry Seinfeld and Fred Armisen, and they were in Portland, and they were like saying how everything takes like forever because it's like the hipster wait time. Like, it was like a joke.
Right.
Everything's like for a cup of coffee, it's like 15 minutes, but it's like normal there because everyone's just like, you know, like more laid back. In New Jersey, I feel like everyone's like down each other's throat. Like, I don't know, but definitely sounds like. How's the music scene there? Is it in Seattle more or less? Is it like everyone walking around wearing Nirvana and Pearl Jam shirts, or is it like more diverse than you would think?
I wouldn't say that, but of course Nirvana, that they're so appreciated here. Everyone has a lot of tried for Nirvana, but walking in Seattle, it's kind of similar to New York City. You know, you see those guys with the trumpet, the guys with the saxophones or whatever it will be. But in Seattle, it's kind of I don't even know what to call it. It's a keyboard. I forget the name of the instrument.
But are you like blow into it?
Yeah, it's honestly, I can't even really describe it. The noise it makes, though, is awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're. I think Revolution plays that in their band.
Yeah, right. And it's funny though, because you know, you see those older guys in the city playing the old school instruments, and then you come to Seattle and it's more modern, even if they're just on the street, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. You guys have the Gorge down there, which is like not comparable to like anything really. I was going to say to like a PNC or like a Camden, but that's not even close
that.
Because I just it's an outdoor amphitheater. But what was you've been to a show there, right? What?
I actually, it was last October, or 2 Octobers ago, I don't even know, time just doesn't even really matter anymore to me, but yeah, the Gorge is phenomenal. I was lucky enough to see Dave Matthews Band there, and a funny story, I didn't even have money for a ticket or anything. I drove 3 hours down there, because my cousin actually flew in from New Jersey, she drove here from New Jersey, took a little road trip, and I wanted to meet her because obviously she came so far, And I'm familiar with Dave Matthews, and I'm not the biggest Dave Matthews fan, but I can appreciate his music. I love the vibes that he puts off. But actually, he was able to sneak into the show, being the badass that I am. And the show was phenomenal. Right when he came on set, the sun was setting, so he had that nice little backdrop with like the mountains and the scenery. It's awesome. Everybody there, just great vibes. Dave put on a great show. I love how he interacted with the crowd a little bit. But regardless of who's playing at the Gorge, honestly, I would go back for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, it just looks like an awesome venue to be at, let alone if you're like an artist to play there. But with that sunset and everything, just like everything looking right out. Do you plan on going on to Dead & Company, or is that up in the air? They're playing there on June 29th this year.
If you're here, I'll go, but I'm not going to go by myself.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tickets are like, I don't know. I'm sure they'll go down, but I got are you coming home at all for the summer, or you don't know?
I'm not sure yet. I probably will. I'll probably be home probably July. Maybe for 4th of July, I'll come home again.
Okay. So I know they're around us around first weekend of June, then they're back in New York second weekend of June, I think. But yeah, I don't know. That would be awesome to go out there and to the Gorge, and then how far is Eugene, Oregon from there?
Eugene's not too far, maybe 3 hours. Probably, it's probably the same distance from where I'm at to the Gorge to go, as compared to going down to Seattle. I think it's probably both 3 hours, roughly.
So you never know. We go to the Gorge the 29th and then just leave there that night and hit Eugene, Oregon the next day.
Right.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to play a song I picked from Dead & Company's performance at the Gorge on July 23rd, 2016. They didn't play there last summer, and that's going to be Brown Eyed Woman.
Ladies, we're sailing and we're at Jane. cost $2 and it burned like hell. I could hit me just to fry the steel. Drink down a bottle and really to kill. Brown eyed women and red remedy. The bottle was dusty, but the liquor was clean. Sound of the thunder with the rain pouring down, and it looks like the old man's getting on. Gone are the days when the ox farmed down. You take up the yoke and plow the fields around. Gone are the days when the lady said please. Gentle Jack Jones, won't you come to me?
So that was Brown Eyed Woman from The Gorge on July 23rd, 2016. So we're going to get into the final segment now of the interview. And it's just basically like generally, I know you said you're more or less just getting into the Dead. Like that first, I feel like caught the fever for him. And now like you just keep reaching out for more. I know you asked me to make that YouTube playlist with some of the basic like general songs to like get you into it. But what have you like really picked up on the last like couple months of first listening to them?
My biggest takeaway, and it's something I've really always admired with the Grateful Dead, it's just the fans, you know, like just hearing stories from my dad telling me about how he followed them around everywhere. It's just the loyalty these fans have you, and I'm sure everyone listening, and I'm kind of getting to that point as well. It's kind of a shame we didn't grow up in that era, you know, because I'm sure I would have been just like my dad following them around if I could have done that. But just the passion, of course, and the loyalty, like I said, just this fan base is amazing, and it's really inspiring, honestly, when you see, especially you told that story a little bit ago about how we saw that group of people after the show, and you hooked them up with a ride. Just that everyone gets along, you know. It's just good vibes music, and everyone, there's really no, you can't go to a show and really, no one's going to be fighting, you know. It's not like a friggin' mosh pit or anything. Everyone's just having a good time, and that's something I've always looked for when listening to music. I'm not the biggest music fan, but you just give me some good vibes and then some good tunes, and I'll be happy.
Yeah, definitely. It's like that's what really drew me into, is just like the community, like, everyone's like, you don't have to like, doesn't matter what you do outside of that, but once you're in there, everyone's like one, really, which I think is pretty cool. What would you say are their first three songs that really got you hooked, that like had you itching for more?
Okay, so like I said before, I might butcher some of these names, so don't hold that against me, listeners. But the first one during when we were there, actually, Friend of the Devil, I really enjoyed that song live. It was great. I want to say that I enjoyed it a little more live than I do like listening to it recorded or whatnot, but it's still one of my top songs. And this song I listen to every day, the mashup between Not Fade Away and Going Down the Road, that song just gets me, it just gets me so happy for some reason.
Definitely.
I listen to it every day. Angelo probably knows, I'll send him Snapchats from time to time, just rocking out a little bit. But that song, it I don't know, it just, like, touches me on a spiritual level somehow, and I love it. But, Scarlet Begonias, of course, that one was one I could kind of relate to. That was a song my dad knew, and that was a song I knew from Sublime, so when we both listened to it together, that was kind of a cool moment. But now,
yeah, I was going to say, like, the first three, like, that get you hooked, and then have they changed? Because, like, I know for me, like, I've probably had, like, 10 different favorite songs from when I first started listening to them. Like, it's not that you get sick of them, but you just, like, put that in the memory bank, and then you search for more. So, if you have...
And, nowadays, Dio is the one I really like. I love that live version with Jerry, obviously. I forget what the venue was, but I think it's the first one that comes up when you type Dio Grateful Dead on YouTube. That's a really, really good vibe song, which I'm always looking for. Franklin's Tower, that's a classic. Slipknot's another classic. There's just so many, and I'm still learning the names of some, but I'll roll with those ones for now.
Yeah, I would say definitely you like think you got it, and then you're like, oh, let me listen to this one, and then it just
right.
Like you never get it. It's like I've been into them deep for like 5 years now, and you're still like learning new things. Remember when we used to come home from OCC or like on a Friday night or something and nothing to do, like you want to watch the Grateful Dead movie? You're like, yeah, sure.
Right.
That's like basically how I started getting into them, was just watching that, and then like really thought the animation was cool and everything in the beginning of the movie, and then actually getting into like knowing the band members and then the songs and then like building it from there. But that was definitely like a huge building block for me. That movie was just constantly watching that. So, what was your initial to the band and, the scene, and are they the same from when you started listening, to them more, or do you have a different perception? Like, when people would say like Grateful Dead or like, Deadheads before you really got into the music, was it different than what you think of them now?
That's a good question. And, I'll just say a quick anecdote real quick. So I was actually down in Mobile, Alabama this past week covering the Senior Bowl. I'm not sure if many are familiar. I will say that Alabama, they're big on the Grateful Dead. They love them. But I met one of these guys I know from Twitter. He's a fellow writer. And he had Grateful Dead hat on, and I just got so pumped right away. You know, that's a talking point right off the bat. But if someone mentions Grateful Dead now, I get really passionate. I'm like, oh, that's one of my favorite bands, you know? Like, obviously, I don't know as much history. I don't know as many songs, but, you know, that's what I listen to every day now. But as far as comparing before I started listening to them, I think the perception is kind of the same. It's, of course, a little skewed, a little different now that I'm more into them. But I always knew the fan base was loyal, as I mentioned earlier. I always knew it was just a good scene and a great group to be a part of. And I'm happy that I finally gotten into them and really dig into them as deep as I do now.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Yeah. Also another question. Do you have like a favorite time period? Really, I know some people are more key on like acid tests, like 60s, early 70s, or some people are more into just 70s or anything like mid 85 to 90, like that kind of era. What would you say your favorite era would be if you had one?
As I said, I'm not as informed on the earlier stuff, later stuff, you know. I guess you can kind of tell in the actual music itself, but as far as being knowledgeable, I can't really say too much. But based off what I've seen, you know, when watching on YouTube or whatever, you see the years on those videos. And I want to say that most of the time, I'm more attracted to those songs from maybe the 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was to start off, it was like 74, 75, and then like I really got into like mid to late 70s, and then early 80s, that's always like that was like their peak, really, I would think.
Right.
But you're on the right track if you hit that right on the head. But I mean, you could talk to anyone, they'll argue with you saying this year was the best year. Like I posted Instagram story, was 77 their best year? I know it's a broad question because it's 1 year out of 30, but I got like it was nail biter, it was like 26 to 25. So you had a lot of people agree, but you have a lot of people disagree, and that's what you'll find out with the Grateful Dead. Everyone has their opinion, and they voice it a lot. So And like what we were saying, to grow up in that era, like when people, you'll find out people now, if you find, I don't know, if you run into some, like an older person, I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, but like someone not in their 20s and 30s and who are around when Jerry was alive, and you ask him about the Grateful Dead, that you might get the, well, what do you know about the Grateful Dead? You weren't even born. Like, yeah, but we can't help that. We weren't, like, if I would have, were to pick, I would have picked to be born in that era, but like, you can only appreciate as much as, you know, we want to, and I feel like we shouldn't be held back before that. It's like you're getting into them now when you're 25 and it's 2018, but like it's not like out of style. It's not like a, you know, it's never too late. I feel like
that's like someone saying, "Oh, you can't be an Eagles fan because you weren't born yet when they started playing football in like 1940s or whatever."
Yeah, exactly. Like it's not my fault that he, you know, tragically died in when I was 1.5 years old. Like it's, I can't help that, but, I don't know. But, so last segment right here, we're going to have you pick your favorite Grateful Dead song, live or studio version as of right now. So, what would that be?
Ooh, you know what I got to go with. I'm sorry if it's a little long, but, Not Fade Away. And, Going Down the Road mashup. That's my hit. That's my jam right there.
Yeah. So that's what I felt like I was coming. So, glad you could join us. Hope you had a fun interviewing. Had some more insight. Maybe you'll get some more followers on your podcast and some football questions on your Twitter. And anything else you want to add?
This definitely took me out of my comfort zone, but I was happy to come on. Thank you everybody for listening. I'll just Twitter out there again. I'm a big NFL draft guy. If you're in the NFL draft, definitely want to hit me with a follow. At @JohnValencia_WIB and I spelled it out in the beginning of the episode, but also check out BreakingFootball.com. We have a bunch of talented writers there. We're really growing, and we would definitely appreciate your support.
Yeah, so one from one podcaster to another, and also one Eagles fan to another. Go Eagles on Sunday, sir. Right?
Go Eagles and go Yankees and go Flyers.
And Sixers.
Right there.
All right. See ya.
Nice lot. Peace out.
feeding men. Going down the road, feeling bad. Down the road, feeling bad. Yeah, yeah. Don't wanna be treated this way.